Chapter 94, A Decree from Krakow. Shmerl the house painter was a simple Jew, but a magnificent painter. Many noblemen hired him to paint their lavish mansions. On the day that the delegation was so coldly rebuffed by the governor of Vitebsk, Shmerl happened to be working on a newly built wing of his mansion. As he quietly painted in one room, he overheard a conversation taking place between the governor and his wife. Neither of them realized that Shmerl was working nearby. He hung on to every word, realizing how important it was that he remember everything he was hearing. When he had finished for the day, he left the mansion and hurried to find the leaders of the community. He related all that he had heard, the entire conversation, word for word, between the governor and his wife. "You will see," boomed the governor. "I will make them suffer with my own two hands." "Who exactly are you talking about?" asked his wife in surprise. "Who, you ask?" roared the governor. "That rich, miserly Jew, Segel. That's who." "What did that rich, miserly Jew do to you?" his wife asked. "What did he do?" repeated the angry governor. "I have been running after him for weeks already, trying to arrange a loan for my friends in the Polish government. They urgently need a large loan of 150,000 gold coins for 2 years, and I want to be the one to get it for them. But he, that arrogant, miserly Jew, refuses to open his pockets. 'I don't have that sum of money,' he tells me, as if he expects me to believe that nonsense. He offered me just 20,000 gold coins as a loan. Pathetic! What nerve! Who does he think he is? I'm going to teach him a lesson. That cursed Jew stores away huge sums of money for himself. He steals it from our hard-working, poor Christian brothers. And when I want to borrow some, he tells me he doesn't have it. I'll show him." "Well, I understand that you have a complaint against Segel," commented his wife. "But why did you lock up the other Jewish dignitaries? And why aren't you telling them what it's for?" "Oh, you are so simple. You don't understand a thing," replied the governor with a rude wave of his hand. "I jailed them to put more pressure on Segel, of course. Anyway," he added, "when that miserable miser lied to me and claimed that he did not have 150,000 gold coins to lend, I told him to gather the money from his Jewish friends. The Jews always have money, you know that. But he, liar that he is, insisted that the Jewish community account was empty. So I locked up some of their leaders as well. Now don't tell me you still don't understand." The Vitebsk community leaders listened attentively as Shmerl spoke. At least they now had a key into the governor's crooked way of thinking. Now it was clear why he had ordered the cruel arrests. "Once again," one of the men said ruefully, "the non-Jews are trying to squeeze money out of us." "Yes, but it is money that we don't have," chimed in another. "Now it's clear," said a third, "why the governor sent his men to remove money and documents from Avram Segel's home. He wanted to check for himself whether Avram owned more money than he was prepared to lend." Shmerl the house painter put up his hand. He had more of the governor's conversation to report. "What are you going to do if the Jews keep insisting that they don't have enough money?" the governor's wife dared to ask. Her question sent her husband into fits of roaring laughter. He chuckled wickedly. "That is exactly why I have invited my good friend Ludwig of Krakow, who is at this very moment in a carriage headed to Vitebsk. He has his own expert ways of dragging huge sums of money out of the Jews. When I set him on the case, money will start pouring out of hidden places in the walls and the floors of the Jewish homes. Ludwig is famous for his special methods of dealing with Jews." The mere mention of Ludwig's name by Shmerl caused the community leaders to tremble in terror. He was indeed famous for his hatred of Jews, and he was a most evil man. There was nothing he wouldn't do to get his way. "If we do not succeed in saving our friends before Ludwig arrives," one of the leaders commented, "they will face a bitter end. He will continue to harm them until he sees the money with his own eyes. But what are we going to do? We all know that the community coffers are empty." From the way the governor answered his wife, it sounds like he will allow Ludwig to harm them, even if they die of their suffering. The head of the group then stood up and thanked Schmerl the house painter for being so attentive and hurrying to share this important information with them. After Schmerl left, the leaders continued to discuss the matter well into the night. The men tried to think of a way to save their friends. Many suggestions were offered, but none of them could really solve the problem. In the end, they had to admit that there was nothing they could do. Almost a week and a half had passed since the arrest of Segal and the four Jewish leaders. There seemed to be no hope for their salvation. Schmerl's account of the governor's words slowly made its way among the Jewish residents of Vitebsk. The Jews were now more worried than ever. They were terrified of the evil Ludwig and hurried to hide the little money, jewelry, or other precious possessions that they owned, fearing that the governor's guards might show up at any time in search of the riches he required. Their main concern, however, was for the fate of the five imprisoned Jews. Then, on the night of Shabbos, exactly 10 days after the arrests, a very large man whom everyone called Tall Shmuel entered the main shul of Vitebsk. "Gentlemen," he boomed happily in his loud, cheery voice, "I have good news for you." The entire shul fell silent, and everyone turned with anticipation to face their tall friend. "It is my pleasure to inform you," Shmuel announced, "that Bechazdei Hashem, Rav Avram Segal the Gvir, Rav Zalman Leib the Rosh HaKal, as well as our other three arrested friends, have all been released from imprisonment and are now recovering in their own homes." A gasp of amazement and relief swept through the crowd, followed by a powerful sense of joy and unity and thankfulness to Hashem. The men hugged, laughed, and danced. It was a while until Shmuel was able to continue speaking. Not long before candlelighting time, Shmuel eventually explained, Zev Wolf the renter arrived from Krakow with a command that was signed and sealed by the king, ordering the governor to free the five prisoners immediately. None of the residents of Vitebsk, aside for the small group of Nestarim, knew that the Baal Shem Tov had seen well in advance with its Ruach HaKodesh that it would take exactly 10 days for the decree to be cancelled and the arrested Jews to be set free. Yosef Yitzchak, the son of Kerbel of Sharia, who was learning in Vitebsk at that time, saw this as yet another opportunity to witness the Baal Shem Tov's greatness and holiness. He was awed by the Ruach HaKodesh that allowed the tzaddik to see distant places and far into the future. The story, however, was not finished. Rev Avram Segal had a son named Leib, who was determined to do something about the governor's cruel behavior. Leib Segal wanted to teach the governor a lesson, and more importantly, to make certain that he would not treat the Jews the same way again.